All right, so today we're going deep on Moseley v. General Motors. And, it might not sound like the most exciting case at first glance, but bear with us.
Yeah.
You asked us to cover it, and it really does bring up some fascinating points about, legal procedure and how that impacts, access to justice, especially when it comes to discrimination.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this case is a perfect example of how, efficiency in the legal system can be a good thing, but you always have to be careful that, you're not sacrificing fairness for the sake of just, speed.
Right. So we've got our case brief here, some opinions from the courts, even some direct quotes from the judge. Lots to dig into, but just to kind of set the stage, we've got 10 plaintiffs in this case, all alleging racial discrimination by their employer, General Motors, and also their union. And so they, naturally they decided to file a joint lawsuit, kind of team up. It seems to make sense, right? More voices, stronger case, maybe.
Makes sense on the surface, for sure. But, the district court actually initially wanted to separate their cases. I think they were worried about it, becoming a huge mess to manage with so many different plaintiffs.
That's where it gets interesting. So the case brief, it tells us this all comes down to this concept of joinder. Essentially, whether multiple plaintiffs can, legally combine their lawsuits into one. And specifically, it hinges on Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 20A.
Yeah, that's the one. I know it sounds super technical and dry, but that rule is hugely important. It's basically what allows for, collective action in a lot of cases in our legal system.
Yeah.
Especially when you're talking about things like systemic discrimination, understanding joinder is, it can be really key to getting justice,
So the main question before the court was a lower court right to break up these plaintiffs' cases? What was the thinking there behind that initial decision?
I think the main concern for the district court was just manageability, right? You've got 10 different plaintiffs, each with their own individual stories and claims. It could easily become, a very complex and potentially messy trial. It's almost like, herding cats.
Right. Okay, so the case brief lays out the facts for us.
Yeah.
All 10 of these individuals filed charges with the EEOC, and they got a reasonable cause finding, meaning, the EEOC thought there was enough evidence to move forward. And then they filed that joint lawsuit, all seeking various forms of relief.
Right. And the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, they ultimately disagreed with that lower court, said, nope, these cases should stay together. And their reasoning, there was this kind of common thread running through all those claims, the possibility of a company-wide discriminatory policy at General Motors and the union.
And there's this great quote from Judge Ross in the opinion that really sums it up. He says, the impulse is toward entertaining the broadest possible scope of action, consistent with fairness to the parties. Joinder of claims, parties, and remedies is strongly encouraged. It's like he's saying, let's make this efficient, but also fair whenever we can.
Exactly. The court realized that having separate trials, it would just be this huge waste of time and resources. And not just for the courts, but especially for the plaintiffs themselves. And there's also the fact that there's power in numbers. A collective lawsuit, it can send a much stronger message and potentially lead to more meaningful change.
Okay, so to determine if joinder was appropriate in this case, the court had this two-prong test, and it's all laid out nicely in our case brief. So prong one, the plaintiff's claims, they all have to stem from the same transaction or occurrence.
Mm-hmm.
And then prong two, there has to be some shared question of law or fact.
And this is where things get interesting. The court, they use this analogy to a voting rights case, which is really clever. So they argued that if a statewide system, that's designed to disenfranchise voters can be seen as a single series of transactions, well, then a company-wide discriminatory policy at a place like General Motors should be treated the same way.
Wow, that's a really good point. And it makes this whole legal thing, the reasoning, it makes it so much easier to understand, even if you're not a lawyer.
For sure. And it also shows that the court was willing to think big picture. They weren't just looking at 10 individual cases, but the potential systemic impact of this lawsuit, which is a big deal.
So according to the analysis we have here in the brief, Moseley v. General Motors ended up setting a major precedent. It basically broadened how courts interpret joinder, specifically in employment discrimination cases, which then makes it easier for people facing similar issues to kind of band together.
Yeah, that's huge. This case has the potential to make the process more efficient and give more power to individuals who might otherwise feel, overwhelmed or alone when they're trying to fight against discrimination. But, like we were saying before, efficiency isn't the only thing that matters.
Right. So what are some potential downsides then to this kind of broader interpretation of joinder? Could it lead to situations where, like, the unique details of someone's experience in these cases, could those get, I don't know, lost or overlooked in a big joint lawsuit?
Yeah, that's a valid question. It's something we need to consider for sure. I mean, it's a risk, right? It's a trade-off. You gain some efficiency, but you have to be careful that individual plaintiffs aren't getting, well, lost in the shuffle.
I see what you mean. Like, let's say one of the plaintiffs in this case had, I don't know, a really extreme experience, you know, something that might warrant a much larger settlement or a totally different legal strategy. Could that kind of get buried under the weight of a joint lawsuit?
Exactly. It's a tough balance for the courts to strike. They've got to weigh the efficiency and the power you get with collective action, but then also be aware that some individual claims, they might get diluted or, you know, even completely missed.
It's like finding the sweet spot between, I don't know, a class action lawsuit where everybody's kind of lumped in together and then like a ton of separate individual lawsuits, which we already talked about, could be a logistical nightmare.
You got it. And this case, you know, it doesn't give us a perfect formula for like how to find that balance, but it does give us a framework for broader joinder. Ultimately, the courts still have to use their best judgment and, you know, really consider the specifics of each case.
So it's not like a one-size-fits-all solution. Every case needs to be looked at carefully, taking into account the details of the claims and how a decision might impact everyone involved, both plaintiffs and defendants.
Exactly. And, you know, this is where having a good lawyer is so important. I mean, you need someone who can explain both the things that connect all the plaintiffs, but also the unique experiences of each individual.
Right. Like someone who can see both the forest and the trees.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's zoom out for a second. This case, it was decided way back in 1977. Has it held up over time?
Well, it's definitely considered a landmark case in employment discrimination law. I mean, you see it cited all the time in later rulings about joinder. And for the most part, it's seen as a positive development, especially for plaintiffs who are trying to, well, to address systemic discrimination.
So it's probably safe to say that Mosley v. General Motors, it had a real impact. Made it, well, like a little easier for people to, you know, to come together and fight for their rights. But as we've been talking about, it also brings up these complicated questions about fairness and efficiency in the system as a whole.
That's exactly right. And those are questions that people are still debating today. There's no, like, easy answer, right? But, you know, Mosley v. General Motors gives us a really good starting point for the conversation.
And I think that's what makes this case so fascinating, right? It's not just about, you know, 10 people who are fighting for their rights. It's about how our legal system changes and adapts over time, and how we as a society, you know, how we try to find that balance between fairness and efficiency when it comes to justice.
I like that. You know, it reminds us that legal precedents, they don't just exist in a vacuum. They have this ripple effect. They influence tons of other cases, and they really shape how we approach these big, complicated legal issues.
So Mosley v. General Motors, even though it's from decades ago, it's still relevant. It offers some really valuable insights for anyone who's interested in, you know, learning more about employment discrimination law and how this whole idea of joinder has evolved.
Definitely. And it shows how important it is to, you know, to stay informed about these kinds of developments, even if you're not a lawyer or involved in a lawsuit directly. Because at the end of the day, these rulings, they impact all of us. They shape the kind of society we live in.
You know, now that you mention it, there's something in the case brief I wanted to touch on. The idea of relief time, it comes up, well, several times in the plaintiff's allegations. What exactly is that referring to?
Oh, yeah, relief time. You know, it might seem like a small detail, but it actually tells us a lot about the type of discrimination alleged in this case. So in this context, relief time refers to, like, the breaks that workers were entitled to take during their shifts.
So the plaintiffs were saying that General Motors and the union, they were discriminating against Black employees when it came to giving them these breaks.
Exactly. And that's it's a subtle but potentially really significant form of discrimination. Denying breaks or limiting them in a discriminatory way, well, that can impact workers' health and their productivity. And ultimately, it can affect their ability to make a living.
It's a good reminder that discrimination, it can take a lot of different forms. Sometimes it's really obvious, like unfair hiring practices. And then sometimes it's about things that seem, well, kind of ordinary, like break times.
Exactly. It's about creating a workplace where everybody's treated equally, where everyone has the same opportunities. And I think that's, you know, at its heart, that's what this case is all about. Mosley v. General Motors, it's about pursuing justice and equality in the workplace.
Yeah, and it's those small details, you know, like the relief time issue. Those can sometimes be a sign of a much bigger problem, a bigger pattern of discrimination.
I totally agree. It's like a canary in a coal mine, you know? And in this case, those allegations about relief time, well, they add another layer to the plaintiff's claims. They suggest that the discrimination they were facing, it was widespread. It affected a lot of different aspects of their experience at work.
So as we wrap up our deep dive on Mosley v. General Motors,
yeah,
what's the main thing you want our listeners to take away from all this?
I think the biggest takeaway is that even when you're talking about these seemingly boring legal procedures, at the heart of it, these cases are always about people.
Right.
They're about, you know, people fighting for fairness and systems that can either help or hinder that fight. It's about the ongoing struggle for a more just society.
Absolutely. And, you know, Mosley v. General Motors, it really shows us that achieving justice, it often takes collective action. You know, that old saying, strength in numbers. Well, this case made it a little easier for people who are facing, you know, similar problems to band together, fight back against discrimination.
Oh,
right. But like we were saying before, it's complicated. There are always trade-offs to think about. We have to be careful that individual voices aren't, that they don't get lost in the, I guess you could say, in the pursuit of a more efficient system.
Right, right. It's like we can't just, you know, rest on our laurels and say, okay, we got this landmark case, we're done, we've got to keep, you know, asking those tough questions, keep pushing for more fairness, more accountability, making sure that the legal system really does work for everyone.
Well said.
So Mosley v. General Motors, it's historically important, but it's also, I don't know, surprisingly relevant to some of the things that we're dealing with today. You know, it's not just a dusty old case in a law book. It's still a part of our legal landscape.
I agree. And it really, I think it highlights how important it is for everyone to stay informed about these legal developments, even if you're not, you know, a lawyer or directly involved in a case. These rulings affect all of us, you know, they shape the world that we live in.
You know, if I had to give our listeners just one piece of advice based on all this, it would be, if you're ever in a situation where you feel like your rights have been violated, don't be afraid to reach out to other folks who, you know, who might be going through something similar. There's strength in numbers, and together you might be able to, you know, accomplish things you never thought possible.
And never underestimate the power of a good legal argument. Mosley v. General Motors, it shows how, you know, even something like a procedural rule can have a huge impact on people's ability to get justice.
So true. Well, that about wraps up our deep dive into Mosley v. General Motors. Thanks for coming along with us on this journey. Keep those brains working. Keep asking those tough questions. And we'll catch you next time.